Us versus Commonwealth, Mr. Foley, Mr. Campbell. Well, I see Mr. Foley, but I gather Mr. Foley won't be arguing.
Sorry, it's Carpenter.
Okay, all right. No problem. Glad to hear from you again, Mr. Carpenter.
Good morning again, Your Honors. Allison Carpenter on behalf of Mr. West. May it please the court, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
That'll be granted.
In this particular case, we are looking at an order from 2009 that the Circuit Court entered, which stated that it extended Mr. West's probation, but it did not say that extended Mr. West's suspended sentence.
Well, let me stop you right there, because it seems to me, and there's obviously this one dating question where depending on how you define it, either clear or unclear, that the court continued the probation and was silent on the issue of the suspended sentence. But implicitly, why would the court not also extend apply the extension to the suspension, I should say, to the additional probationary period, since it would be a nullity otherwise? I mean, you put somebody on probation with nothing hanging over their head, they're really not on probation, basically. There's no consequences to violating it otherwise, isn't it?
Well, two responses to that. One is that the burden would be on the court to specify that it did want the suspended sentence. And so it may, in the court's mind, not make sense for the probation to be continued without the suspended sentence.
Why? But, I mean, what possible reason could there be for such a thing, since there are no consequences of that? I mean, you have... It seems to me they go hand in hand, because without the probation, you have no reason, or at least some conditions for the suspension, which is what probation is all about. You don't have any reason to put a person on probation.
Well, I guess I'm looking at the case White v. Commonwealth, the Supreme Court of Virginia case, where the individual was on a one-year suspended imposition of sentence under 251. And she completed the conditions except for the payment of costs. The court then, at the end, found that she completed her conditions for her 251 disposition, but then continued her probation until her costs were paid. And so in that particular case, she did commit a general good behavior violation during that additional period of cost probation, if you will. But the Supreme Court determined that that did not violate her underlying 251 disposition, because the probation was only specific to the costs. And so I think in White we have a situation where someone was on a term of probation, but it was not for general good behavior or for a suspended sentence. In that case, a suspended imposition of sentence.
None of this was ever raised in the trial court, is that correct?
That's correct.
So in terms of ends of justice, I know of no situation where we've ever applied ends of justice to a situation where someone has clearly violated the terms of their probation. And said that they shouldn't suffer any consequences for it.
Well, in this particular case, the terms of the probation were not violated until after the October 2011 date, which is Mr. West's position on when his probation ended. And so although the terms were violated in 2009 when the order in question arises, but then the next violation, the violation in question, which was ultimately decided about a year ago, those did not arise until after Mr. West argues that his probation had terminated in 2011. It was, the letter was brought in 2012.
Well, I get that that's his position now, but unfortunately he never took that position in the trial court, and that's the problem. And so the question isn't whether or not, you know, that position is well taken or not well taken. The question is whether it's a situation we would normally apply the ends of justice exception to. And as you know, that's a very narrow and sparingly used exception. And at least in the time I've been on this court, it's never been used to reward someone for what amounts to bad behavior.
Well, if the bad behavior is after the term of probation, then it could be the clear error of the manifest injustice where Mr. West's probation had terminated, and yet the court believed that it continued to have jurisdiction over him when it actually did not. And so the 2009 order in and of itself, it did impose 60 days on him, and it did find him in violation. But this additional term of probation that it imposed through its words didn't come with a suspended sentence. And so when the court looked at it a year ago and imposed, found Mr. West in violation again and imposed the balance, if the court didn't have the jurisdiction to impose the balance at that point, then I believe it would fall within the...
Well, now we're talking a different issue, jurisdiction. We're not talking subject matter jurisdiction. We're talking about whether the court had any authority to act. And that gets us into this whole void versus voidable. And again, I know of no circumstances where something that was merely voidable has been, the ends of justice exception has been applied to go ahead and void it ex post facto, if you will. So can you point to any case where you've ever done that? Because I sure can't think one off the top of my head.
I don't have a particular case to point your honor to. I think when we're looking at the 2009 order, the two parts on top where it finds him in violation and imposes the 60 days, were legitimate parts of the order, but the void part would be the part of the probation that's not backed up by any suspended sentence. And so we know based on other case law, whether keen or heartless, et cetera, that string of cases, that probation is meaningless without the suspended sentence, and the court indeed did not extend the suspended sentence. And so probation, well, the option then is in 2011, what happens? If probation continues, then there's no suspended sentence. So our position is that the probation was meaningless, and therefore it would have terminated.
Could a court enforce an order of probation through its contempt power, even if it lacked the authority to bring back a suspended sentence?
I believe that it could. It did not in this particular case. I think there are those
I'm just trying to figure out if there's any enforcement mechanism at all. You know, and one might be, well, implicitly it carried with it the whatever time was left to be suspended. And the other is, no, it can't do that. But nevertheless, it still has some ability to enforce compliance with its orders, and that's through the contempt power. Because there's an order saying probation. If you don't comply, then maybe contempt.
Right. I do think that there are a limited number of things, whether court costs or restitution or contempt power. Those are some of the ways that once a suspended sentence itself has expired, that the court can still try to encourage people on probation to comply with at least some conditions or some rules in order for the court to either recoup its money or encourage other compliance with court orders and court
rules. Can a court nunc pro tunc, if the court meant to say in the order that it was resuspending the balance, for example, could the court now nunc pro tunc say, I spaced out, sorry, I meant to do that, and then there was a scrivener's error, and could it do that now?
My position in this case would be that it cannot, because the record doesn't reflect that that's what it ever intended to do. One, it's not in a transcript or anywhere in the record that it did want to do that. But two, I think that it needed to say that. I think that's a substantial change and not just a court error.
We have a lot of case law that says the trial court is presumed to know the law, absent an indication to the contrary. Given that, why isn't it fair to read into that December 3rd, 2009 order that the resuspension term that had been originally 4 years wasn't just implicitly made in that order?
Well, I think that if that's what the court intended, perhaps the court only intended to continue it 1 year, the suspended sentence, perhaps, I mean, there's a whole range of different things.
He did it 4 years before, and he's essentially resuspending. I guess there was 60 days to serve,
right.
And he resuspended 2 years and 6 months. But if you don't then resuspend it for a period of 4 years, you may even, calculated the 2 years and 6 months from that time period, but it would seem that perhaps you would go, the period it is resuspended would be shorter than the potential sentence that was left out there as a potential to serve. So it concerns me if the trial court is presumed to know the law and he suspended the suspended time for 4 years and then is presumed to or is said to not have put it out for any additional time.
Well, I think the problem is that we don't know. What did he resuspend it for, the balance, meaning 2.5 years? Did he resuspend it just for the one additional year of probation?
Well, he certainly didn't execute any portion of the suspended sentence. So, and I guess the corollary to Judge Beal's question would be, if we have an ambiguity in this court order that continues the probation, do we construe the ambiguity in a way that results in an absurdity, which is that there are no consequences, or do we construe it in a way that would implicitly carry out the whole purpose of probation, which is that you benefit, you comply, you don't have your sentence executed, you don't comply, you risk having all or some portion of it executed?
The question, I believe, would be when did it really end? Is Mr. West still subject to it, 4 years from 2009, continued to 2013? If we're continuing it 4 years from when he was released, is it from when he was found in violation? I think there's a lot of different options that could have come. And so the question would be, is it just extended for the 1 year that the trial judge said that probation was extended? I would think, and I think that maybe some of these issues must be construed in favor of the defendant. Because if we don't know, 4 years is certainly...
Why do we have to construe it in favor of the defendant? We're not talking about a penal statute. We're talking about a procedural statute.
Well, because if the court speaks through its orders and it doesn't specifically say how long it's going to continue to extend the suspended sentence, then Mr. West is living, for policy reasons, he's living his life not knowing when he could be revoked. And
can I seek clarification from the court?
I guess he could.
And that gets to my non pro tonque, where the court could say, oh, the Commonwealth is wrong. I just meant to do X and that was the goof. Or I meant to suspend all of it, not part, and then we have clarity.
Well, and in this particular case, the 2013 judge was a different judge than the 2009 judge as well, because the 2009 judge had retired, and so we don't really have clarity based on what the judge did in 2013, because it was a different individual altogether. And I think that I think there's many different options of what the judge could or couldn't have done or could have meant. And we can guess about what
If it wasn't for coulda, woulda, shoulda, three of us would be unemployed right now. So.
Exactly. And so we could guess at what he may have meant or may have intended to do, but without it being written down specifically, all we can assume is that probation was extended. Probation is meaningless without it.
What about those cases that, if this were a blank slate, it might be easier for your position, but we have those prior cases that talk about the implicit resuspension. So how do we deal with that?
Well, I think we have some, there are certainly the Jacobs case and Muhammad case and Lei Tao, which get into that along with Heartless. And in Heartless, for example, it says that because we couldn't have a suspended sentence without probation, we can't have the opposite, which is probation without a suspended sentence, because probation depends upon the suspended sentence for enforceability. Mr. Heartless then wasn't, they read the probation not to have continued. And then we have these issues of indefinite probation, et cetera. I think this one is just the very narrow situation of the probation should have just expired. Probation could not continue without a suspended sentence and therefore just should have expired on its original date.
All right, thank you, Ms. Carpenter. We have not quite 2 minutes left. Mr. Campbell?
Good morning. May it please the court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. The court should affirm because the trial court did have jurisdiction in this case. I want to begin by giving an admission, and I'm frankly a little bit confused still now. And when I wrote my brief, I was under the misunderstanding that the appellant's position was in 2009 when the trial court extended the probation for a year, couldn't do that because it didn't resuspend any of the remaining sentence. That was my impression of their argument. And therefore, I cited the cases of Jacobs and so forth, where we say, well, there can be an implicit resuspension. I don't think that's quite the appellant's argument. Now that I've had some time to reflect and look at their reply brief, I think their argument is, in 2009, when the trial court imposed the 1 year probation, it couldn't do that because it didn't extend the 4 year period of suspension. And I would say that this case is, that would be controlled by another line of cases, specifically the Wright case from 2000, that says when there is a revocation like there was in 2009, then that period of resuspension restarts. In Wright, there was the defendant was given a 5-year period of resuspension, a 5-year suspension period, and during that time there were some revocations, and then after that 5 years, he argued that there couldn't be, the trial court couldn't revoke his probation because it occurred after the suspension time, and the court said, well, every time that there was a revocation, that 5-year clock restarted. And I think that's what we have in this case. We have, initially the trial court said that there was a, in 2006, that there was a 4-year period of suspension. In 2009, there was a revocation. Implicitly, that 4-year period restarts. So I don't think they survive on the merits, but they have the added problem that this is an ends of justice case. They have the burden to show that there was absolutely a manifest injustice.
Well, to be honest with you, Mr. Campbell, I'm a little confused now about the appellant's position there. I thought initially that that's what was being argued on brief was ends of justice, but I just heard an oral argument, a suggestion that this was a jurisdictional issue, which maybe can be raised any time. I'm not sure. Of course, that deals only with subject matter jurisdiction, which I don't think is really the issue here. But There seemed to be a little bit of a suggestion that we weren't really talking so much about ends of justice as a jurisdictional issue that could be raised for the first time on appeal legitimately. But I would gather your position is not terribly different either way.
Right. I think they argued both, actually, on brief. They argued that the ends of justice should apply, but they also argued that this 2009 order, this goes into their second assignment of error, was simply a nullity and therefore void. And it's...
Well, would you agree that if we're not talking subject matter jurisdiction, what that would be, it would be voidable and should have been done in a timely fashion?
Absolutely. If they're challenging the 2009 order as a nullity, as voidable, that should have been done 5 years ago. And it wasn't done. There's a case, a fairly recent case of Dunham, where the appellant had argued that the trial court's extension of its suspended times, like this case, was void, and this court said that's a collateral attack. You should have challenged that years ago. I don't have anything else.
How do you respond to Ms. Carpenter's point that there are a lot of options here? You can't just assume because it was a 4-year suspension in the 2000 previous order, was 2007, that in 2009, that December 3rd, 2009 order also would involve 4 years.
Yeah, in the Wright case, that's what this court did, was that we presumed that there wasn't explicit in the Wright case either, that there was a resuspension. And so, and then this court also did that in 1995 in the Briggs case, which Wright relied on. And there wasn't an explicit resuspension of time in either one of those cases, if it's my recollection. And therefore, we can presume that that's what happened.
In the face of silence, the law supplies the answer, which is the entirety
of the time,
of
yes.
The time continues. Yeah. And of course, the idea is we're trying to rehabilitate these folks, and they keep getting into trouble. And so we need certainty in the face of uncertainty, so we're implicitly.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's plenty of case law that says that we review revocation statutes and matters liberally.
As opposed to strictly against the defendant.
Absolutely.
Right. Ms. Campbell? I'm sorry, Ms. Carpenter.
With respect to Jacobs and Lei Tao, in those particular cases, those are distinguishable because the balance of the sentence in those cases, actually, what the appellant was arguing was that the balance should be discharged. And in this case, in 2013, Mr. West's suspended sentence had already expired. I think Jacobs and Lei Tao are distinguishable because when those defendants made that argument, their balance was still in effect from the original sentencing date. And so that sentence was still suspended. And part of the reason the result in those cases would have been so absurd is because it would have served to basically reduce the period of suspended time that the court imposed at the original sentencing date. And so I do believe Jacobs and Lee Tao are distinguishable additionally because it doesn't make sense and it can't make sense for the probation violation court to go ahead and take the time away that was originally suspended by either the same judge or a different judge at the original date. And in this case, we don't have that situation. Mr. West's original period of time had expired, no matter how you look at it. From 2006, it would have expired in 2011 based on his release date of 2007 from prison. And so this isn't a situation where it leads to the absurd result of him only having 3 years of a suspended sentence or 3 years of a probation where it was originally ordered to that he had 4 years. And so that is not one of the issues in this case. He had, certainly under any way of looking at it, served 4 years of probation and 4 years of the suspended sentence at the time that he was violated and at the time these violations occurred. And I think in this particular case, it's just a very narrow situation of, in 2009, the judge extended that probation, didn't extend that suspended sentence, and therefore our position remains that it expired in 2011 as originally it would have based on the original orders.
Thank you, Ms. Carpenter. Two announcements before we come down to greet counsel. First, the court will take a recess immediately.